if all you ever hear is, well, if you do this, you could die. If you do this, you could die. If you do this, you could die. You know, how comfortable are you going to be doing your job? That risk is far less for somebody who's wearing full protective equipment, an SCBA, has a hose line with them, and is trained, than it is for the occupant that's laying on the floor waiting to be rescued.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance, Weekly Scrap, number 143, with special guest Dave LeBlanc. I am super excited about this because this is one of my favorite people just to have conversations with. 3 decades of being involved in the fire service, author. He ran one of my favorite blogs. When I promoted to company officer, had a huge impact on me. His articles on Backstep Firefighter blog, Views from the Front Seat. Like I said, when I was a young officer, this man shaped me whether he knew it or not. He is currently the chief of his department, which puts him in very special company because, generally speaking, there's not a lot of chiefs that make it on the scrap. Out of 145 episodes, I think he's the fifth chief to make it on here. So that's pretty special company. Like I said, I love this guy. Amazing conversations each and every time. So with all that being said, Chief Dave LeBlanc, welcome, my brother, to Weekly Scrap number 143.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate the invite. I'm humbled by your words. It's always good to hear that you had an impact. I'm not sure that I'm worthy of that, but I appreciate it anyways. And it's great to be on the show. You know what you do here is phenomenal, and have an opportunity to share whatever I have to share, and I really appreciate it.
Beautiful, man. Is there anything I left out of the intro that you would like to add?
So the only thing I'd like to add, and it's a little shout out. So Bill Carey, it's his birthday today.
Nice.
So it's kind of even more appropriate. And, you know, my voice, where I got the opportunity to start writing and everything, started with Bill and Backstep Firefighter. So I don't know that I would be where I am. The opportunities I've had to teaching at FDIC, all the conferences I've taught at, all came out of my writing, and I owe all that to him. So happy birthday, Bill.
And you never know where those impacts are going to come from, man.
Right. That's, yeah, 100%.
Great. His impact on you, your impact on me, and now the impact this scrap's going to have moving forward. All right, I'm going to tell everybody as we go forward, there are internet issues. So far, I know it's locking up every once in a while. I don't know how the impact is. So you have to let me know as the crowd out there, as the guests. As long as it's good enough to listen to is what I'm trying to say, we will press forward. But if it becomes unintelligible or we start sounding like robots, you have to let me know, because me and Dave sound great together here. So with that caveat, keep me informed. I'm counting on the audience. As always, if you have questions for Dave or myself or any of the topics or any of the rabbit holes we go down, throw them up here, because as always, Kyle Romagus, Mr. Smoothbore Cartel, Mr. Sexy Mustache, although I got to say Dave's giving him a run for his money.
I got nothing on that man.
He is curating the questions and will throw them at us. So with all that being said, Dave, let me catch you up with what a few people have said. Stashtastic, that came from Joey Hayes. Knock It Out Dave from Greg Wheeler. Chief Dave LeBlanc is one of the best out there from Brandon Pfaff. Hi from Houston, let's go. That's from Roy Digray. Jaime Reyes, one of my other favorite people, said, here we go. All right, man, 100%. There is a ton of it. All right, with all that being said, we're going to jump right off into topics. Is there any other housekeeping I needed to do? Okay, here we go. Leadership challenges as you promote. That's what I kind of wanted to start with, because the last time I talked to you, you were not in your current position, and you definitely have a perspective over time of changing seats and the perspectives and the responsibilities and the view that comes with that. So that's where I wanted to kind of kick it off with.
So, you know, I'm blessed that, you know, I grew up in and promoted within the same organization. So while that brings challenges, and we're a small shop, 36 full-time, including the deputy, myself, and all the shift personnel. So, you know, that's good and bad, right? You know everybody, you know the ins and outs of the place. And the nice thing, the transition from when I was deputy chief, was my boss and I worked really well together. So I didn't have to, I didn't feel like I came in and had to make a lot of changes. Certainly there's things you always want to do. I'd say probably the most humbling thing about the whole thing, and we're blessed. We've got a great department, great group of people. Love going to work every day with them. They do an awesome job for the town. But, you know, there's so much you want to do. And I think we all had those days sitting in the recliner said, you know, someday when I'm chief, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Those words are a lot easier to say than they are to do. And I think you realize that at every level. You realize that, like, when you're shift officer, when you're company officer, when you're deputy, you know, you want to change it. But you can do it. You know, you can certainly pull the old, you know, I'm dad and I said so thing. But that doesn't work. You know, you need buy-in from the group. And it's not always easy. And there's times you got to put your big boy pants on and say, hey, well, this is what we're doing because of what we have to do. But you're much better if you can build a consensus and try and make those changes. And that's not always easy to do. So I will retire. I know I'll retire whenever I do, being frustrated at the laundry list of things that I wanted to accomplish that I wasn't able to. Doesn't mean the organization is going to be any less than what it is. It just means that there are things that I wanted to do that, you know, for whatever reason, either people didn't see the value in them that I did, or I wasn't able to get the consensus, or, you know, in some cases there are ideas I've moved away from based on what I thought was a good idea. But when you start getting other input, you kind of go, maybe it's not so much. Maybe we'll, you know, maybe we'll right. go a different direction. So
maybe this wasn't worth the energy I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And you know that, so you got to keep your ego away from your ideas because that's a killer, you know, and I mentioned this to you last night and I, you know, I'll touch on it. Cause this definitely is the biggest thing I learned is like, you have to be okay with other people not knowing your side of the story. And that is impossible for me. So I struggle with that every single day because I feel like I always have to tell my side of the story. I have to explain myself. I have to let people know, you know, why, but it's okay because you're not going to convince everybody. And even when you explain it, people aren't going to either agree or see it with your perspective or understand it. So, you know, it's frustrating. I love it. I love going to work every day, but there's days I come home and I'm, you know, I'm mentally exhausted versus being physically exhausted. So
has there been I know it's challenging, like you said, you have to be okay with people not knowing your side of the story, and you said that's tough for you, dude. That's damn near impossible for I think most firefighters. We want to be understood, especially when we're making decisions,
right?
Has there been anything specific that's really just been a tough jagged pill, and without getting into details of your organization, but just in general.
Nah, you know, knock on wood, things are, you know, a couple minor issues and everything else. And, you know, I think like anything, there's, you know, you always know when you make a decision, when it involves, you know, personnel or something like that, that the personnel that are being affected are going to have their perspective. And that's the one that's going to be heard the most because not everybody's sitting in the chief's office asking him, hey, how come this happened? And when they are, you're not telling them because it's most of the time it's not their business.
And it's a personnel issue, yeah.
But the personnel will always have the last word. You know, that they'll be the one sitting around the kitchen table telling the story. And that's kind of, you know, where I learned about it. Like, I got to be okay with that. You have to be okay with that because you're never going to impact or influence that. And eventually one of two things happens. Either the truth comes out or the rest of the story comes out, but not because of you, because somebody else. Or the noise dies, you know, and it is what it is. And people realize that, you know, they may be upset about something or they didn't think it went the right way. And then they find something else out later on or they move on and it's a different issue. So, you know, I can't put my finger on one specific issue. It's sure. Even when I was deputy, it's every single case of discipline that I was ever involved with is always that way. You always know that there's the troop level story, which is both sides of it. You know, but you know, the victim tends to be the one that everybody gravitates towards. So, and I shouldn't say the victim because it's not, you know, discipline to me, it's never personal and it's always about just trying to keep everybody, you know, inside the lines. That's all it is. And, you know, it's always done in my mind with a helping hand and trying to make the person better and correct an action. So, but it's not always seen that way. Right. So that's kind of one of those stories. And, you know, you definitely deal with it at the top with like trying to, you know, town policy, you know, pushing town policy down. It's 100% dealt with it with COVID. And I will tell you that that was the, so I became chief in the middle of COVID.
Okay.
So I dealt with it for almost year, 6-8 months as deputy, and then became chief in the middle of it. And, you know, fighting the belief, the disbelief, the backyard scientists, and we fought all that, that all the time. And really what became my mantra through that whole thing, it's just like, we don't have a choice, right? These are the guidelines. We're going to follow the guidelines, period, end of story. And to me, wasn't a choice until somebody smarter than me tells me to do something different. There's no choice involved here. And that's kind of what we did. And we always tried to, put some common sense into the whatever the decision making was, whatever the policy was, whatever the thing was. Because I always tried to keep, I was sympathetic to the guys who were going out the door every single day, the people going out the door every single day, getting stuck in a 20 square foot ambulance, especially in the beginning when we thought it was, really, 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 really scary. That created a lot of stress. And that was where we always tried to kind of attenuate that stress and keep people happy.
We've got questions coming at you from the audience already.
Oh boy.
Yeah, always. But this is solid, man. Marco Isom said, Dave, did you do anything special to get buy-in from the crew? What did you do when you got pushback?
So I think nothing special. I think I'm trying to remember the book and I'm not going to remember where it came from, but it kind of was an eye opener for me of, people need to know the why, and everything starts with the why. It doesn't matter how well you explain something, whatever. If you can explain the why to somebody and make them understand the why, then everything else kind of layers off the top of that. So I try to do that. And that both ways, when you're trying to explain something and when you're trying to determine something out. So I had a great instructor in one of my chief classes when I made deputy that he used to, it was this old proverb that he quoted, and it basically was seek first to understand. And I loved it because it's right. So I ask a lot of questions and I always try to explain to people, like, me asking questions isn't me questioning what you're doing. It's me trying to understand why you did it. And that those are two completely different things.
Right. Right.
Questioning somebody is saying, why did you do that? Whereas trying to understand is, hey, I'm trying, and it's how you word it, obviously, and the tone and everything else in which it comes with. But yeah, that seek first to understand and knowing the why and trying to share the why, because it makes everything else understand. People understand why. They may not agree with it, but at least they know it's not just something that you're trying to do just to do it.
Love the answer, and that's it's a definitely a life hack for buy-in, if there is one. Smoothbore Cartel said the easy solution, the basis behind Expect Fire, ROE versus OSHA, and Make a Hole, Make it Wide are some of my favorite articles. Chief LeBlanc is a true inspiration. So there you go. I wanted to give you a hype one. Because that is a good nice list of articles right there. Going to the next question, which Kyle says, not a question, but Jack McGovern states, best bit of advice I ever got from Chief LeBlanc was to go for a ride. Please get him to talk about the importance of going for a ride.
So I stole this from, so I had a cool, it's this little story behind the story. So one of my mentors is a retired deputy chief from Mansfield, Mass. I went to college with him, great friend of mine. And one of his mentors was his chief when he was a young firefighter who went on to become the deputy state fire marshal. And then when I was teaching at the local fire academy, I got to work with his boss, his mentor. So the mentor of my mentor, as I used to say all the time.
Right on.
And I was having a bad day one day. I was at work, probably something to do with a disagreement between me and my boss, because we didn't always see eye to eye. He was a great boss, but that's just life. You don't always see. Super frustrated, and so I went out. I got on the phone. I'm talking to him, and so Jim told me, he's like, get in the car and go for a ride. And I was like, okay. And he's like, go for a ride and go for a little while and just cool down, just drive around, look at the town, do whatever you're doing. And when you get done with your ride, if you're still pissed off, go home. Take the rest of the day off, because you're not going to do anything effective. So then the best part was hearing the same the same words come out of his mentor's mouth a little while later. We were having that conversation and he's like, yeah, that's 100%. Get in the car, go for a ride. It's, I do it all the time. Sometimes I do it even when I'm not having a bad day. I love just driving around and going down streets that you don't normally go down and looking at houses and everything else. But, I think a little bit better when I'm driving around, and it certainly gives you the opportunity. The biggest thing that I learned getting promoted was, I very rarely engage anything in the moment. I'm a emotional person, emotionally driven, huge emotionally driven person, which is a detriment. I get pissed off really easy. I don't get outwardly pissed off, but I get pissed off inside, and I will make bad decisions and I will react poorly in those moments. So I walk away a lot, cool off, think about it, talk to somebody, and then come back to it and then see if I still feel the same way before I jump into something. Sometimes you have to react in the moment. I really try not to.
Out of curiosity, just for myself, how is it, 30 year in the service, Dave LeBlanc, rewind time and say, how much different was that for young Dave LeBlanc?
So young Dave LeBlanc didn't get pissed off because I didn't have anywhere near the amount of influence or responsibility that I have now. So I was just dumb and rode in the back of the ambulance and rode in the back of the fire truck. And
okay.
But a life lesson way back then is I used to get cranked up with the guys who worked on my shift that weren't as into doing something or whatever. And my captain said to me one day, who ultimately ended up being my chief when I was deputy, and he said, the problem is you're holding them to your standard. And when you're a peer, that's hard to do. There's a certain amount of peer pressure that works, but you live, Bill Carey says it all the time, you do you, and you got to do the job the way you want to do it. And it's hard sometimes to hold your coworkers, your equals, to that same standard. You can encourage them, you can try and get them to come along, do those, but that's more likely to work than getting jacked up about it. And then you end up in an argument over something that you don't really have the authority to push that issue forward.
No. And it ends up being wasted energy and damaged relationships.
Yep.
And loss of influence. No, it's beautiful, yep. Man. A lot of wisdom in it. All right. Another question coming at you here. Chief, this comes from Jeff Stone. He said, would you say that the need for transparency and investment in explaining expectations and concepts is more necessary in the newer generations of firefighters and company officers because of the lack of experience and wisdom that comes with time on the line? What has changed since you first started riding the right front seat? There's a lot in that question there, but so, whatever you want to try and start unpacking.
So I don't know that the need has ever changed. The need has changed for transparency. I think what has changed is, all right, so maybe the need has, but earlier generation, you just did what you were told and you went out, there was no quit because dad said so, and that worked and that was acceptable. It's work. My boss told me to do this. I may think it's dumb, but my boss told me to do it. I'm going to do it. I think that, generationally, as we've changed, there's been more of a need for some quantification, some qualification. And I think that it probably would have done, it would have been just as effective back then. It just wasn't the way leaders were taught to lead. So leaders weren't necessarily taught 40, 50, and probably before that years ago that they needed to explain. I always remember from MASH, I'm a MASH buff, Colonel Blake one time is talking to Hawkeye, and Hawkeye goes, why did you say so? And he goes, because when they promote you to colonel, they remove the bone in your head that makes you explain yourself to captains. And, I think that was more of the mindset, of that era, right? I'm the boss. You do what I tell you to do, period, end of story. And now there's some, going back to the why, seek first to understand, all those things, there's some value in getting the buy-in, and that buy-in comes from transparency. People understanding what you're trying to do and why you're trying to do it.
And, beautiful answer.
The change from when I first, so my career is, relatively speaking, is short. I started in Harwich in 93. I started initially dispatching, became a firefighter in 2000, lieutenant 08, captain in 12, and deputy in 15. So my right front seat time was was kind of short toward the tail end of my career, and I went kind of quickly into the car, which is 100% different for us. You know, so, you know, chief and deputy work days and then live at home. I chuckled the first fire that I went, that my deputy went to after being a captain, because you know, you're driving, you listen to the radio, you get there, you're trying to get dressed, you're doing all these things, you're exhausted by the time you get out of the car, let alone everything else. And that's a huge change from being in the right front seat. You're dressed, you know, you're getting off the truck, you're ready to go to work. So I think, I don't think there's been a huge change in the fire service in that window for me.
Right.
But certainly my job has changed a lot. You know, lieutenant to captain was a little bit different. Captain to deputy was night and day different.
No, I can only imagine. I'm absolutely jumping from the engine to the buggy for me was like I've always told people, one of the hardest transitions I've ever tried to make. And, cause I didn't feel like a firefighter anymore, cause I was no longer crawling in on the knob, but,
right. You have to stop running, right? I mean, that's the thing. That's Leo Stapleton advice, but it's, you know, it's one thing. And I remember reading, they talked about a chief from New York City in one of our tactics books. And he talked about, he used to put his gloves in the sleeves of his coat. So when he'd get out of the car and he'd be getting dressed, when he put his coat on, his hands would hit his gloves and it would force him to just take a breath. That was like his mental cue to just slow down, you know, because you need to stop running. You need to not use your hands anymore and use your eyes, your ears, you know, you're in a different role.
No, it's beautiful. I was trying to think of you made me think of something here, and I'm just going to bring it up real quick because it's your ship. Is it Abershoff? I believe it's Abershoff who wrote his new book, Leadership Communication. Man, I'm getting the name of the book wrong. It's a beautiful book, but it talks about, authoritarian leadership style, that whole do it because I said so. It's just a throwback to the industrial age, and we've kind of just evolved past it, because back in the day you sat in your office and you just made, the whole point was production,
right?
You know, production, and it was workers, and there was a fine line between the workers and it's a beautiful I've never really looked at it in that regard of the fact that we've
I won't remember, because it was a long time ago when I read my company officer book, but they talked about was it the type X leaders and
theory X, theory Y.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that whole thing, you know, and, but it's true. Right. And, you know, and I've worked for those guys that, you know, most of them are retired but were bosses and retired by the time I, you know, started coming up. But, you know, you work for those where it was like, why are we doing this? Cause I freaking said so. It was pretty much, you know, or just do this. We don't care. You know, I think the fire service has always been a little bit different because, you know, there's always been more opportunity to explain what's going on. You know, we live together, we work together. So it's not as, you know, you're not on an assembly line making widgets with the boss sitting there, you know, with a clipboard counting the number of widgets you made. But
no, and there was a time when that was effective. And in those scenarios, it's effective. But the fire service has always relied on, and not only relied on, succeeded because of elder statesmen of the fire service investing in the younger generation. Those few, and because not everyone did it, but those few that did guaranteed that the succession continued, you know, and so beautiful. All right. Where are we going? I want to get to this. This is accountability and responsibility. And I'm not even sure how to ask the question, but there is, especially with social media, there's so many opportunities for people to express opinions and,
So let's unpack it. So I'm going to start with accountability. To me, and the kind of responsibility, accountability go together. And, you know, you and I talked about this briefly. So internal and external accountability. So I'm going to leave the internal alone. We know the accountability inside. We have an obligation to our people to provide them safe working environment, you know, for us to be at our best. You know, and that accountability starts with yourself, making sure that you're doing all the right stuff. We all know that. But what about our external customer base, right? And I hate using those words. The citizens.
The citizens. Right? The people. Absolutely. Right? Them. Yes.
So, you know, you recently there was, and I'm not going to go into any details. Some people will figure it out from the discussion. And I'm going to try and keep it vague because I the last thing I want to do is malign anybody's character, slander anybody, anything else. But there was a discussion recently about fires, vacant buildings, and the risk associated with them. And there were some statements made on that that kind of flew in the face in my upraising, you know, growing up in the fire service, what we're all about. And, you know, a town near us, and this, I use this anecdote yesterday. So if you're not doing what you're supposed to do, what the job's about, right? Life, property. If you're not doing that, then you need to tell your community you're not doing it and explain to them why. And this kind of goes back to the transparency thing we just talked about. The fire service has gotten a free ride in my mind for a long time of we're the fire department. We do what we do and nobody questions us. Most people, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but most people don't have an idea whether we do a good job or a bad job. No, they just know we do a good. We just show up.
Generally speaking, we can burn it to a slab and then give each other high fives and said we fought the dragon.
Yep. And most people will still bring you a plate of chocolate chip cookies for doing that.
Thank you for saving my slab. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, and I'm going to go on seven different tangents here.
Do it. I love it. That's what the scrap's all about. Go.
But so if you look at some recent history, and I don't want to get into details because to me it's way too early to judge, but if you look at Uvalde and some of the initial thing out of there, and some of the criticism that comes out of there, I believe strongly there is going to come a day for the fire service, and it probably already has. Polk County was a case not that long ago where the fire service isn't going to get a free pass anymore. We're going to show up and we're going to perform, and we may do the best that we can do. We may do it 100% right, but we're going to get called on the carpet for not doing something that somebody feels we should do. And so, you know, life safety and property conservation are, you know, those are our two main tenets. And, you know, we put fires out to put the fire out so that people's things are saved. Think, you know, Aaron Fields talks about things matter, stuff matters. Mm-hmm. So I think when you think about your accountability to your taxpayers, to your citizens, you know, you ask for that new fire truck for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Everybody's got PPE that's supposed to protect them when they go into the building for thousands of dollars a set. You're wearing a $8,000 air pack. You have, you know, a $6,000 radio. You have $15,000 worth of hose on a fire truck. You have all of these things that are supposed to enable you to do your job. And then if you show up and say, that's too risky, I'm not going to do it, at some point somebody's going to push back. Right. And we're in a society right now that questions just about everything, no matter what is done.
No, and like everybody carries an HD camera in their back pocket, you know.
Yep. So I think that there's some accountability, and I think that there's some statements get made on social media, and I think that anybody that thinks that the citizens don't read that, you know, my pool of friends on Facebook is people that I live and work with, people that live in my town, and then a bunch of firefighters from across the world. And I get in discussions with you guys all the time. I'm always cautious about what I say because I know that every once in a while, somebody who's not related to my fire world will like a comment or you know, reply to a comment that is on a discussion that I would never expect them to appear in, you know? So,
right.
So I think that that's a concern, but I also think that we as a fire service need to be honest about what we're going to do. Now, if you can't do something, and I get it, and every world is different. I just wrote a couple of weeks ago an article about perspective, and it was based on, you know, everybody gets in these fights on the internet, which is just stupid anyways, but I can't. But because they're arguing from their perspective, right? They're arguing from their experience. So my experience and your experience is different. You work in a different world than I work in. You have slabs. I have basements. I stick out in the middle of the ocean. You know, you're in the middle of the country, you know, but our experience is different. You've been to more fires, different fires, whatever the case may be. So when people start arguing this, what they're not taking into account is it's like looking through two different pairs of glasses at the same situation. And I think that that's where we get lost. And that I'll go back to my seek first to understand. The first thing we should be doing, and I used that quote in that article, is trying to understand where the other person's coming from, what their experience is. Because there's a lot of things that dictate whether we're going to go in the building. The type of building, you know, the building construction, the amount of fire that's in there, the capabilities and experience of the responders that are there. Those things are all factors that So for me to say that department should have done this, they may not be able to do that because there may only be two people showing up on an engine or two engines showing up with two people. I have a friend that's out in Oregon in the Bend area that, you know, routinely is one of two guys in the fire ground. He's the chief.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, that's a little bit different.
And they're making, and they're still making interior attacks when they have to, you know, and that's, you know, to other people would lose their app, you know, they lose their mind. But the concerning thing about the discussion that I was referencing was that there was a judgment made about people in the building and whether or not we should go in for a certain type of person or class of person. And keep me honest here, Corey, because I don't want to go too far into it. But I feel like whenever we make those judgments, this is my problem I had with survivability profiling. You know, the tenet of it of, you know, if we're standing on the front lawn and the smoke looks so bad, then nobody's going to survive. So we should, you know, we should slow down and put the fire, you know, worry about putting the fire out instead of searching. When we start making godlike judgments from the front lawn, I think we've gone the wrong direction.
Overcorrected.
As a fire service.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
and
so
and like you said, when we start saying, you know, that like you said, making judgments on whether someone's worth saving or not
is what and there was a line of duty death, I don't know, probably about 10 years ago. Bill Carey and I were talking about it. And I was trying to remember where it was. I think it was Chicago. It was a vacant laundromat, I think, in an alley. It was early in the morning, and it collapsed, and I believe two firefighters were killed. And a popular fire service writer, and I don't remember who it was. I don't remember what magazine it was. It wasn't like at Fire Engineering or Firehouse. It was one of the popular, but not necessarily... Right.
Not one of the staples, but...
One of the commonplace magazines that everybody would read, but there was an editorial that talked about, you know, the argument was they went in because there were homeless people in the building. And the statement from the author was something along the lines of, you know, well, homeless people flee like rats, you know, when the building catches on fire. So they shouldn't have been in there. And that person got crucified on the internet, in print, and everywhere for making that comparison to homeless people to rats. And, you know, I just think that, you know, something we always need to be careful of. To me, you know, a life is a life, period, end of story. And we should be doing, I think the equation boils down to, in my mind, a little bit simpler, which is if there's spaces that we can get in and search, or there's an ability for us to enter the building, then we should be entering the building. So nobody's ever argued in this. You know, I always love this argument. Well, you know, we shouldn't be rushing into fully involved buildings. No, yeah, you're right. I think everybody agrees with that. And that's not what anybody's saying.
Right.
You know, if we can get in, we should be going in. The fire started somehow, even if the house is vacant.
And what,
you know,
part of our risk analysis or our judgment analysis doesn't come into is this quality of the life we are saving come into the equation?
Never. Right. 100%. Right. Don't 100%. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. No,
that's not even anywhere in my thought process. It's either a life or it's not, you know, and to me, you know, you go back to, well, it's, you know, the building's not vacant until we prove it's vacant and everything else. And all those things are dependent on what your capabilities are and what you can do. I would agree. You know, we determine that the building's vacant when we search it. We can't always search every part of the building because of a variety of reasons. So, you know, you do the best you can do, but your mindset from the beginning needs to be. And this is where I think fire training has gone askew. The conference is not, certainly not, but I think that some of the basic conference, basic training has gone askew is that, you know, we're teaching from this position of fear.
Right.
Right. Bill's done a great job with the statistics and how flawed that they can be. But if all you ever hear is, well, if you do this, you could die. If you do this, you could die. If you do this, you could die. You know, how comfortable are you going to be doing your job? Because I would argue that while there's risk in going in a burning building, that risk is far less for somebody who's wearing full protective equipment, an SCBA, has a hose line with them, and is trained than it is for the occupant that's laying on the floor waiting to be rescued.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So our job involves risk, absolutely. But realistically, and there's wild cards in everything we do, the average house fire, if there's such a thing as an average house fire, that risk, if we're properly trained and equipped, should be pretty minimal for us if we go in and do the job the right way. And that's what we should be focused on.
1,000%, man. Best way to take care, know how to do your job, man, is the best way to stay safe.
Right.
1,000%. I am going to scroll back up here to something that Smoothbore Cartel said because I loved it, if I can find it. Dave has written some of the best responses, and this ties in here, some of the best responses to Keyboard Warriors that I have ever read. And he's spot on. And I wanted to touch on a couple things here, and I hope I don't lose my train of thought. One of them is what you're talking about. And I don't really like the word because it's such a soft and I don't know, but it's grace. When you say, look at it from their point of view, basically, it's give some grace for their perspective. Right. You know, and I don't really like the word grace because it seems so not, but it applies. But what I'm getting at on your responses and what Smoothbore Cartel is talking about is how do you keep that civil discourse in on the internet where it's so easy to get emotionally fired up behind your keyboard and also hold people accountable despite who they might be or where they work or their tenured careers or legendary status. And what's this may be too big of a Pandora's box to try and even peek inside.
So I can try and answer that at least from my perspective. And this is only my perspective. So I think I would like to think that I'm pretty well grounded about who I am and what my experience is. I am in a small New England town. We don't go to a lot of fires, but we have a pretty good run card and we go to, more fire. We're more fortunate than some in terms of work and less fortunate than others in terms of work. That's what it is. But that's always kept me grounded. I feel like I was raised the right way in how to do the job by the department I started as a call firefighter in the town next door by those guys. And then the department I'm in now. And have always believed about how, do the job the right way. But I'm also pretty honest about who I am. And, I'm not going to argue with a New York City guy about fire duty because he's going to have me beat, 9 times out of 10, going to have me beat 100% of the time. But that doesn't mean my opinion's any less. So I've always tried to start with, I take my ego and put it aside. I try to keep my ego in check quite a bit, which is kind of egotistical to say. So it's kind of, that was a whole hypocritical sentence, but you keep your ego in check and step away from your ego and you can have a good conversation with somebody. You may not agree with them, and there are a lot of people, but I always try not to get dirty in the internet. I learned a long time ago, Steve Gallagher is a friend of mine. He was retired as the assistant chief in Chillicothe, and he said there's nothing anybody can say in the internet that's ever going to get me mad, and not because what they say doesn't make them mad, but because it's the internet. So I grew up that you don't say things at the kitchen table if you're afraid of getting punched in the face. And that's how I've always treated the internet. Same way, right? I'm not going to say something on the internet that, the next fire conference I go to, I'm standing next to the guy shoulder to shoulder and him go, hey, remember that time we had that conversation? And next thing I know, I'm eating teeth. Right. So that's not going to happen. So that's just kind of how I've always kept myself honest. And I think you can make your point without being a dick, to put it bluntly. You don't need to be
beautiful.
You don't have to be, right?
No, and if you've and the people that feel like they have to be, I think it just kind of shows that the lack of their not integrity, the lack of the veracity of their argument, so to speak.
So I read a pretty cool quote yesterday, and I actually shared it and I loved it. It's like it said something about you got to be able to make your argument without yelling. So going back to my whole, I live on my emotions. So that's where I am. I escalate. You question me and boom, I'm next thing, my voice is up 2 octaves and I'm yelling across the room and I don't need to be. And that's kind of how the internet is, right? Is that you can escalate or you can have that conversation and maybe you'll learn something or at least learn where the person's coming from. You may not agree with it, but, I think you're always better for it. You always learn something.
I love it. Okay, before I switch to the next topic, Billy Rhodes asked a question. Chief, what fire tactic has changed for the best from the beginning of your career to present day?
I
actually like this question. I'm anxious to hear your answer.
So I came in, PPV came in when I started. and is kind of gone by the wayside. I mean, still gets used, but not the way, you know, we were, where we were, you know, putting hundreds of cubic feet, thousands of cubic feet air.
A fan in every door, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think the one that's changed for the best, I would say, and this is personal experience based on what happened in my department, is hose line and nozzle choice and use, you know, all around. We went from, when I started, we were 30-degree fog, indirect attack, crawl to the middle of the room, hit the ceiling three times, it would darken it down, go put the fire out. And that's, you know, we're using now smooth bores, direct attack. Even when we're not using smooth bores, at least not in my department, but other departments are using straight stream right. on the fog nozzles. I think that we got fire attack right for the most part across the country now. And there's been a lot of people that have pushed that, from Andy Fredericks right on through Aaron Fields and beyond. And it was kind of, so we talk about the buy-in thing, right? We talked about this as a little story, anecdotally going off the side. So Aaron Fields was coming to our local fire academy. They brought him down here, and I didn't sign up. I wanted to sign up, but I didn't sign up because I wanted to see what my guys were going to do. I was deputy at the time. 8 people from my place signed up and went. So I went and sat in the lecture part. Both days. I didn't do the hands-on part, but I sat in the lecture. I watched a bunch of the hands-on, and they, you know, the guys got excited. It was cool. You know, there was buy-in. They got excited. Aaron's, I mean, you're dead if you can't get motivated by,
He's motivated by that man.
I mean, there's something wrong with you. But so guys were fired up, and I had gotten a grant. We got all smooth bore nozzles. I put together that 8 people became part of a committee, and all our hose loads changed. We pulled more hose in the first 6 months after those guys went to nozzle forward than I did in my entire career prior to that. You know, we stretched lines of fires prior to that, was pretty much how it was. Maybe every once in a while in the parking lot or whatever, but most of the time that's when you stretch lines, because everybody knows how to do that. You know, that kind of mindset.
Why would we practice it?
Why do we have to do that? We know how to do it. So I'd say fire attack is in my career is the thing that's changed, and changed for the better. We're way more dialed in. You know, the UL studies, without going into some of that, because I have some very strong opinions about that, but we'll be here for an hour and a half just about that. But the UL studies, I think, have come around and shown really what we should be doing and how we should be doing it. And, you know, there's some really smart people and capable people that are involved in that. And I think that's why we're where we are now.
Beautiful, man. I wanted to touch on, because me and you both, I'm at 25 years. You have more. You're a little longer in the tooth than I am. But we're both getting to the point where we're staring down the barrel of hanging it up at some point. And what's your plan, or what should people's plan be to stay relevant, plugged in, if they want to? If they don't want to just go toes up in the beach, you know, how do you stay relevant?
So this is a good topic for me. So I don't have a plan. I don't know what after work looks like right now. And that, I'm not going to say that I haven't thought about it, and I have thought about it. You know, what my wife and I have talked about it. I know that I'm not going to retire to sit on my couch, because sure, I'll lose my mind. you know, I would like to teach and keep teaching, but I don't know how practical that is in. You know, I like teaching. The travel becomes an issue. It's just, you know, I mean, a couple times a year is fun. I don't know that I want to do it, you know, like some of these guys that are out, and I don't, God bless them. I don't begrudge them, but I don't know that I want to be in a different hotel every night, you know, teaching every other week in a different state. So I'm not really sure what the after, but I think you need to think about it. And start coming up with that plan sooner than later, because I've met a lot of guys that have gotten to, you know, it also depends on where you work. So there's places where you work, where you go in, you work your shift, and then you're done and you go home, and that's fine. My place, we rely so heavily on our off-duty guys to come back and cover the station and staff the stations that, you know, it can be a 24/7 type lifestyle.
Sure.
The problem is it's 24/7 lifestyle, and you get faced with the reality of, what do I do when I no longer do that? Who am I when I no longer do that?
No,
and that, you know, I'll be 100% honest. I'm human. Yeah, who am I if I'm no longer the fire chief, no longer a firefighter? You know, who am I? What am I doing? And I have friends that I've taught with that are like, the day I retire is the day I stop teaching because I'm no longer relevant. I don't know that I agree with that. I think that a lot of our teaching is timeless and can stay, if you stay engaged, can stay consistent, you know, for years to come. But I also understand that philosophy of, I don't want to be that guy hanging on, you know, just to get the free meal and the beers, you know, at the conference and not bringing any value to the game.
Sure. No. Is it just deliberate intentionality of staying up to speed then?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, okay. You know, I think that if you're good at what you teach and you have a solid basis, you know, solid foundation, as long as you're keeping current and making sure that, you know, you're not teaching something 30 years ago that was relevant that isn't anymore. You know, I think that I don't think you need to reinvent the wheel every 6 months. I think you just need to stay current and make sure that, you know, what some things like forcible entry will change a little bit as locks change or whatever. But at the end of the day, the basics are basic and they're going to be the same no matter where you work and no matter, you know, from, you know, 30 years going forward, you know, it should still be the same. And I think that's when we argue about, or when we talk about, you know, trying to do it differently, we take time away from just learning people how to do it right.
Right. You know, especially the basics. Especially the basics.
Yeah, the basics are always going to be basic, you know. And
no, 100%. All right, where are we going here? Writing. I want to talk to you about writing because we talked about it a little bit last night, but I wanted to bring it up because it had a huge impact on me. So where's the writing? And is there more coming? What's the story, brother?
So every day there's 1,000 words rattling around in my head that I used to be. So like I told you, so most of my articles came out of, and I'm a horrible writer. I'm a one pass haul ass.
love that.
Kind of writer. So I would have a conversation with somebody like you or whatever, or a little bit of debate or an internet discussion would spark it. And I would get fired up about it. And I'd sit down, I'd write it, you know, in a half an hour, I'd write 1,000 words, 800 words, and I'd send it to Bill Carey and go check it for typos and put it up. And he would. And, you know, a lot of good stuff came out of that. As I got a little bit more, I don't want to say experience is the right word, but as I wrote a little bit more, I would start editing them a little bit and changing them around, and it would take me a couple days. But what I find now is if I don't finish it when I started, then I won't finish it. And I have a million half written articles. I have notes on my phone where I'll be driving down the road and pull over and write 100 things in the phone. So I don't know if it's because my job changed and I started writing, you know, more for work. Stuff that I had to write, emails, memos, everything like that, that took my ability to write away. I don't know if it's, you know, to Kyle's point, my responses on the internet, a lot of times are articles. If you read them, they're just short articles. So, but I don't know if there's a discussion on the internet that fired me up, if I write 150 words to somebody in response to it, it takes that fire away to write 1,000 words about it and put it on the internet, you know? So, I hope, and I say this frequently, that I can get back into writing because I think I still have a voice and something to say, but I'm struggling mightily to do it.
Well, it sounds like you got like hundreds of notes on the phone and half written articles. It sounds like you got a ton of voice.
Yeah, I gotta put it together, and that's where I struggle right now is putting it together.
All right, I'll stay on you. I'll stay on you if nothing else.
Yeah, I got, you know, I got a bunch of these, you know, these little books.
Right.
So I started a while ago. I get up every morning. I don't know why I'm up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock. Sit in the couch, quiet time, drink a cup of coffee. So I started like to use deliberate instead of watching videos of them building tables on Facebook. I decided to, I would journal every morning for 5 minutes. Just whatever came to my mind, I would just write until 5 minutes was up and I would stop.
That's awesome.
I pulled a couple articles out of that. So there were some that had some value to it. Just kind of undisciplined when it comes down to it. So, you know, I just gotta stop making excuses and do it.
I love the 5 minutes of journaling every morning, man. Are you still doing that, or is it one of those?
I stopped.
No. I try to do the same thing. I try to have 5 minutes of meditation. I try to do an hour of reading a day, which I can break up throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know, 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there. And I try to track it, but not the point. When I'm consistent, man, it's so productive. And then, of course, me being human and me being me, I am wildly inconsistent at times. I'm really good at being inconsistent. Brian Brush said, "My buddy, all caps, miss you, buddy." So I had to throw you at that, from Brian.
It's the best, one of the best humans I know, right there.
Yeah, you're not alone, my friend. Smoothbore Cartel said, "Bottom line, Chief LeBlanc needs a chauffeur at work so we can mine more gold from him." Some guys would die to get the stuff in their heads out in an article like you do. That came from Fire Culture. William Van Brimmer asked, "Was your writing pre-shift or the following morning as you were getting off, or both?"
I very rarely wrote while I was working. I would say a lot of times it was because there was one captain, and he and I would always have good discussions. He was my captain for a while, and then when I got promoted, he relieved me, or I relieved him. And he was usually the guy that would be the foundation for a lot of my articles. We would get into a discussion and he would bring up some points and I would counterpoint him. And then that would be, and then I would go home, sit down and write an article. And it was never by intent. That wasn't my intent. It wasn't my intent to have the conversation and then write the article.
Right.
It was, I would have that discussion and then I would chew on it while I was driving home, you know, 1,000 more words going on. And then I would go home and pull out my laptop and just vomit an article out. Send it to Bill Carey and be like, "Hey, make sure I didn't spell your name wrong and put it on the internet for me." And
you know, beautiful, man.
Bill was awesome. I mean, he really was. He I trusted him implicitly with, I'm like, whatever editorial changes you need to make, you make. You know, because I know he's never gonna steer me, and he very rarely did he. I don't think he ever did. I mean, he would fix spelling. And that was about it. And, you know, he always gave me that voice and that ability and the confidence to do it. So,
and the impact it's had. Jack McGovern wanted to know, in an era where it seems like departments can only keep personnel for five, what are your, I'm assuming 5 years, but what are your suggestions for retaining people in your department? How do you keep people to retirement? Any hints, tips, life hacks, what you got?
So I don't even want to say this out loud because I feel like I'll jinx it, but we are blessed that this department has a really good core group of people. It always has. People come here and they don't leave. I don't know what the secret sauce is. I know that we keep feeding it and it keeps, you know, it keeps consistent. I credit the people that came before, long before me, and I've had nothing to do with that. I'm a caretaker of it. That's all I am. I'm watering the grass and making sure that the lights are on. And but we definitely have had that. And even with around us, where places have people that, you know, moving around and everything else. And I feel like some of that's going to change financially. There's some places that pay a lot better that aren't that far away that I could see in the future. I'm struggling, but we haven't struggled because people want to work where we are. We don't have any secrets for that. We've always had chiefs that have been pretty tolerant of the troops in terms of letting them have say in what needs to be done and listening to them when that comes. And I think that matters. I think that people, you know, just because you're the chief doesn't mean you have to, you know, some of these are my ideas. Very rarely should it be my ideas. Like the troops are the ones that are doing the job, so they should have the input. And I'm not always good. Everything that I say here, I always in the back of my head, I'm going, you know, if all the guys at the firehouse are watching, they're probably like, that guy's full of crap,
right?
You never, but I have strong opinions about a lot of things, but I try and listen more than I speak, and let them have input where they have input. And I've made decisions and had them push back and been like, no, yeah, you're 100% right. I don't even when I don't agree with it. But what if you can make a compelling argument, then so I think that, you know, letting people have a voice in it. You know, at the end of the day, I'm just a fireman wearing a Chiefs shirt. That's all I am. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I love it. And I love going to fires. I love doing the job. And I put up with all the rest of it to be able to do that. And, you know, my troops love going to fires and love doing the job. And that's what we want. You know, that's what we want to do. 100%. And that's none of that's like, you know, understanding, like if the motoring public are watching this, you know, I get it. I know I'm talking to you and you understand what I'm saying, but you know, nobody wants to see somebody suffer a tragedy, somebody's house catch fire. Nobody wants to see that, but all of us want to be able to be in a position to make an impact when that happens.
100%.
And make the best impact we possibly can.
But no, and I want to touch on a couple, two things. First of all, I think it was Jack McGovern that asked the question. I want to touch on what you said first. You're just a firefighter wearing a Chiefs shirt, man. If more Chiefs had that mentality, then I promise you retention would not be the issue that it is today in America's fire service. The other thing is, and someone mentioned it in the comments, but Jack, find the book, The Functional Fire Company, written by the Chief Scott Thompson. And read, if you don't read the whole book, if you're not a reader for whatever reason, but read the whole book, first of all. Chapter 2, The Chosen Culture, 100% a life hack. I hate saying that. I've said that like 3 times, and I don't know why. It is a hack for retention in the fire service. Man, understanding that fire first culture is why firefighters join the fire service. And if people can wrap their heads around that and lock into that, it will make a difference in your firefighter staying. All right. Jim Platt, another question coming at you because I like this question. Chief, do you think doing a daily journal for your shift is important? And I don't know if he means shift duties journal or just doing a journal in general, but he wants to know, do you think it's important? Why or why not?
So I wish I had done, from the beginning of my career, I wish I had done a diary, a journal or whatever you want to call it. You look at all these, you know, all these guys that write these great stories. I have a million great stories, and I can remember them on any given day, depending on how hard I hit my head. But I wish I had written them all down. And some of them are funny. I mean, just you know, we'll do that. You get around the table and you talk about a guy that retired, and all of a sudden, like, the stories will just start flying. And I'm like, man, I wish I had written all these down when they happened. So, from a personal level, I think that is important. I am a wicked traditional guy.
Yes.
I love, but we don't do this where I work, but I will tell you, I'm a traditional guy. So I had a friend worked in New Haven that wrote the company book, you know, for his company that he was on when they worked. You know, they had a log book and they wrote everything down, you know, and I love that. I think that's a cool, we have the bunch of the old log books in our department that are still there. I love going back and looking through them. The company journals that I used to collect a bunch of fire memorabilia. I used to get old ones out of New York City and everything else. And things were this big, and the guys wrote really flowery writing that you couldn't read. But it was just, you know, it's your history, and I think your history is so important. You know, we own our first fire truck. Our fire association bought it and redid the whole thing.
Nice.
And you know, it's not super old. It's 1927. So it's, you know, we're coming up on 100 years here. But it's nice to be able, you know, for the guys and those pictures, that captain I told you about that I used to relieve and was my captain. He went through and pulled all of our old pictures out of the photo albums and framed them and put them up on the walls on the second floor. So you walk down the halls and all these old pictures are there. And I love, because I know a lot of the stories behind him, because I picked the brains of the guys that came before me, taking, you know, the younger guys, and they'll look at a picture and it'll spark their interest. And then you tell them the story that goes with it. And hopefully that gets carried on. I think that's huge. So I would love to do company. I won't do that because I'm pretty sure I'd get shot if I suggested it. But I'd love to do company journals. I think they're great. And I wish I had done a personal journal from the beginning of my career.
Man, I wish I'm the same boat. Man, I'm a journal guy. I'm huge into journals, and I try to. I have like I could probably pull up out of my bookcase back there like three or four that have like 20 or 30 random entries in them, and I'll start another one. But again, my consistency. But I will tell you this is that I've told my son when he got on the job, I said, hey, just get a diary type book that you can buy at any bookstore. I don't care if it's and just write in it every day, because I promise you 20 years from now, you will not regret it. I can introduce you to 100 people who have 30 plus years in this job who said, I wish I would have kept a journal.
Yep.
And I can introduce you to thousands of young people on the job who are like, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And so,
yeah, no, it's true.
Yeah. 100%. I wish everyone, I mean, I'm preaching to myself here in the mirror because I still could do it every day. So,
yep.
Oh, speaking of books, and it's my favorite part, but what we're going to do is this is where I show my absolute and unbelievable trust in Chief LeBlanc. Cause I'm going to give him the microphone for a minute. I'm going to run out of the room. You got like 1 minute to talk about whatever you want as I grab a drink and hit the head before we go into books.
Oh so, boy.
Anyway,
well, I'm going to talk about books while you're gone. Nice. So he, this is a kind of awkward thing talking without the host. But I think that going by, if I'm just going to go circle back on that culture thing, just one more time and finish up, you know, is I think that making things special within the department is something. So our department started, probably about 2005 or six, somewhere around there. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe a little earlier. It started doing like change of command ceremonies. And since then, we've done change of command, swearing ins, all of those things. We do those on a pretty regular basis. And it's an opportunity for us to celebrate the personnel and also an opportunity to let the public share, you know, share inside the firehouse. And I think that that's another thing we kind of touched on it earlier with the public is you need the public on your side. You need to take every opportunity to let the public figure out what the fire department's about. I'm sure everybody can relate to conversations they've had with people from the public that think that there's, you know, hundreds of guys working every day, or, you know, I've had conversations with people like, how big's the apartment? You're like 36. They're like, oh, all on at one time. You're like, no, there's like 8 on at one time. So I think that, sharing your department with the public and obviously depending on the size of your department and everything else, that's easier or harder to do. But I think that we need to not be such a closed society and open our doors and let people in. I was talking about Corey, we probably about 04, 05, something like that. We started doing change of command ceremonies, and then we do promotional ceremonies and we do swearing ins and everything else. And we make a big deal out of it. We celebrate the guys that are getting recognized for their accomplishment, and that's really important. And I think it's one of the things that I know it's one of the things that we get a lot of compliments on for doing well. And I think that any opportunity you get to share your department with the public is invaluable. You just can't overstate the advantage of doing that.
Nice. I don't know what you talk about, but I came in for the tail end and now I get to hear it on the back end when I listen to the recording.
Yeah.
So I'll get to hear it. So beautiful. Thank you for running that for me.
Sure, not a problem.
I'd love to know, and of course, me and you talk about books quite a bit every time we talk, so it's always interesting. But I like to share books with the audience. 100% books that you think firefighters should be reading.
So I'm reading the book right now, and I'm struggling through it because it's a lot to read. But I actually pulled up my books.
Nice.
There
are people already saying.
Wait a minute. I got to give because I'm going to get crap for this. So this guy, see this? I don't know if this will show up. See this handsome guy right here?
I got it.
Little bright. There you go.
Little bright.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of.
So that right there. Oh, there you go. Now you can see him. So that is one Mr. John Spanbauer.
Okay.
So if anybody doesn't know John Spanbauer, he's part of the 350 line guys, Richmond guy. He firmly believes that pineapple does not belong on pizza. And it's his mission in life to make sure that nobody has pineapple on their pizza. So I'm just sharing that because he said I wouldn't. So I'm just sharing that so everybody knows that John Spanbauer says no pineapple on your pizza.
All right. Fair.
Sorry. Okay. I digress. Now I got to find. So I am reading now. It's called Grit by Angela Duckworth.
Nice.
And you and I talked about this a little bit last night. So this is an amazing, there's a lot in this book, and it's a little bit of, it kind of goes in like.
Is this the one you're struggling through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's
okay.
A lot. It's just long. It's no, not, no, I'm no. struggling through because it's long. I'm old. I like short things. I'm like an instant gratification guy. You know what
okay,
I'm saying?
Okay. Just, making sure. Because, okay.
Yeah. But, but she talks about, you know, like people that persevere that are good because they knuckle down and keep trying, you know, and Simon Sinek does when he talks about the SEALs, you know, and he talks about, you know, the perfect SEAL isn't the guy that's, you know, big and muscly or, you know, super fit athlete or anything. It's the perfect guy is a guy that can go completely to the point of exhaustion and then give a little bit more.
Keep going.
So Grit talks about all that, but it talks about why people are good. It talks about, and then the thing you and I were talking about last night, she gets into this whole thing of deliberate practice. And, you know, you can practice for thousands of hours a year at something and be good, or you can have deliberate practice where you practice for maybe a little bit less time, but in a much more focused, with goal oriented. And they talk about it with swimmers. So like, you're going to swim 100 meters in a minute 14, and then tomorrow you're going to swim it in a minute 13 or whatever. Yeah, I don't know what the times are. I'm not a swimmer, but that's what she talks about. You know, like setting a goal for that particular training session and then trying to beat it and then worry about the next thing. So it's a good book. I actually read I'm going through my list here. I got a bunch on here that I haven't quite. So there's actually a cool Duty was actually good. Bill Gates or Robert Gates there, who was SecDef for two presidents, both Republican. And that there's a lot of good stuff in that. Sailing True North was a good one. Admiral Stardivus was a great one. Sailing True North. Yep.
Okay.
But Annie Duke, who was actually a professional poker player, wrote two books. The one I have, one's called Thinking in Bets, and the one that I've read most of is called How to Decide, and it's all about like decision making and everything else. And so,
really, okay, I love
Both. So you know, you and I talked about this, Carly. So you know, I'm a fan. If you don't have this book somewhere in your
combat, yes, 100%.
On combat, somewhere in your thing, you need to get it. I'm a huge fan of like the whole mindset, mental preparation, mind thing, and how the mind works and how we react to certain things and everything else. And all those books kind of tangentially go off on, you know, how the mind works. And yeah, I think my biggest thing with reading that I learned was you have to be able to interpret things into what we do. Because some of the best books about firefighting are not about firefighting.
No, on combat specifically. Right. Man, it's one of the best books ever to apply to us. Oh, go ahead.
No. That's why. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. So, on combat, but you know, it's not talking about firefighting, but you can absolutely pull. You know, and so we talk about like the risk thing, right? Go back to the risk thing. You know, kind of keep circling back on topics. You know, he talks about police officer. The time when they decide that they're going to kill somebody, if they have to kill somebody with their weapon, their service weapon, isn't when they're standing on the front lawn at 2:30 in the morning with a gun pointed at somebody. That's not the time that they need to decide that. They need to have thought about what they're going to do before that. And, you know, the same thing is for you. If the thing you need to decide if you're going to push down that hallway or be able to push down that hallway or, you know, make that search or VS that window, whatever, long before you ever do it. And if you're not willing to, if you haven't had that conversation with yourself, then you're going to fail when the moment comes.
I love that, man. I love it. Any other books before I cut you off? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I think those are a couple. No, nothing are shaking there. But
have you read Peak? I'm right in the middle of Peak. I'm listening to it on Audible, actually. I liked it so much on Audible, I ordered it. And,
really? No, I haven't read that.
But it's... understanding, I'm getting it wrong. Understanding the science of expertise, which goes into deliberate practice. It's completely focused on how to develop deliberate practice. Anyway, because you talked on Grid. Nice. So, and it's an easy read. So that's another part that's
and then,
good about it.
You know, another one that's good, and I think it's Malcolm Gladwell. I'm not sure. I got to find it now. Outliers.
Yes.
That, I don't know if you read that one. So
I read Tipping Point. Tipping Point's one of my favorites. I haven't read Outliers.
Eh, look at this, buddy. Peak. It's right here. I got the sample of it on my nice. Thing. I haven't read it. I downloaded the sample. But Outliers is good.
He references Outliers quite a bit in that.
In Peak.
Yeah. So cool. It's of course my list. I think I just added 61 and 62 to my list of books to read. And I'm trying, and even that's with the hour a day, and I'm pretty religious on the hour a day. I got a stopwatch on my phone that I use to keep good track of the hour a day, and I still can't catch up.
Now, are you one of those people? Do you read multiple books at a time?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. See, I can't. I can't do that, and I can do it a little bit. Like I have a book. I usually have a book at my desk at work that I'll try and read for like 15 minutes when the time will happen, and then I usually read at night before I go to bed. But.
So, and part of it is because, like, Sources of Power, Klein, man, it's a great book. Don't get me wrong, but it's dense, man. I have to take breaks from it because, like I said, it's dense. Oh, here's Peak. This is the copy. I barely started reading it because mainly I'm listening to it on Audible, so you can see where my tabs are on it. But, and then I've got like, what's his name? Obstacles, Holiday. Obstacle, Ego is the Enemy, Obstacles
Away. Yeah, I have Ego is the Enemy actually downloaded now. The Obstacles Away was, that one is awesome.
I haven't got to it yet. I started with Ego, but those ones fire me up. So I kind of use those for inspiration. And then I get into the denser material. It's more like reading the topic for the topic itself. And then I also love to read for pleasure and fiction. I love fiction. So
nice.
Anyway, we could nerd out for hours on books here. Everybody else is like, whatever. Okay.
Right. Exactly.
We have a thing. On the weekly scrap, you've been through it before. It was the 5 questions for firefighters. After hundreds of guests and many people answering and all the low-hanging fruit being taken, we had to update it and say the next 5 questions for firefighters. So, Chief David LeBlanc, are you ready for the next 5 questions for firefighters?
Yeah. Is there a failing grade?
The answers are 100% your opinions. There is no right or wrong. Perfect. And the points are arbitrary. They're assigned by me. And there's been quite a bit of debate of whether I just give everybody max points. It's not true. Some people do not get it. So, but bottom line is this. What single characteristic, number one question, single characteristic makes the difference between a run-of-the-mill firefighter and the top-tier, go-to, badass firefighter?
Passion. Don't even have to think about it. Passion. 100%. I think that qualify that a little bit, you know, ability, skills and ability are always, you know, obviously you want, but a passionate human in anything, I think in anything is going to move mountains and be where you want them to be. And you don't necessarily have to be the best, but if you're passionate, you're going to be really damn close to the best. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, that's who you want. You want somebody that loves the job, loves the work, and is passionate about it. And you know, especially in a job that can be draining a lot of times. And,
right.
You know, so that would be my one word, baby: passion.
I like the answer. I like the trait, and it's hard to argue with because this job is a hell of a lot more fun when you're good at it and when you're passionate about it. And I love that passion. Number one. Max points on number one. Number two, if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice as a rookie, what would it be?
Learn about people. It took me far too long, and I'll retire before I get even close to being where I want to have any kind of competency in it to figure out people. You know, you work with people is one thing, but understanding the nuances of relationships and conversations and being able to have difficult conversations without being pissed off about it and without being afraid of doing it. You know, everybody dislikes uncomfortable conversations.
Absolutely.
Some people are better at it than others, but everybody dislikes them. But there are people that have them every day and I'm in awe that they can do it because I feel like I struggle with it every single day. Ben Martin, and I talk about this all the time, and he'd put me put me out a book a long time ago. I'll give you one more book, The Conflict Competent Leader, when I was having some trouble trying to work my way through some stuff. I would say learn about people. All the rest of it comes, but people, you know, both in externally and internally, going back to that reference, we deal with it. This job is 100% about people, 100% about people, and being able to figure them out and how to work with them and how to deal with them and be better. It makes you a better human, and I think that's what we should all strive for.
Beautiful answer, first of all. Just learn about people, especially if you could tell it to your, like, 20-year-old self. How much of an impact would that make? But not right. The point. You added book number 62 to my list of what I have to read. And then have you read Robert Greene, Laws of Human Nature?
No.
Man, it's massive, okay? But right. it's written really well. I'm telling you, Scott Thompson's the one who turned me on to it.
Right.
And it is probably my favorite book for learning about people. Now, don't confuse it with The 48 Laws of Power, which is also Robert Greene. Not near as good a book.
Okay.
Laws of Human Nature. Unbelievable. Okay.
Right.
Because I had to nerd out on books when you said that. Love that. Max points on number two. Number three, what is your favorite training drill?
Hey, so I don't know. I mean, so this is one I'll struggle with, because drilling was something as a company officer I struggled with. We talk about it all the time. I mean, I loved teaching and training, and I'd probably be better at it now than I was then, because I wasn't doing as much teaching. But just because you love it doesn't necessarily mean you're good at it. So coming up with, like, drill ideas and then putting together a good drill was always a struggle. But I think I would have to argue, like, a first 5-minute drill, where you know your single company drill, and you pull up, and you know, what are you going to do in the first 5 minutes? So it's getting water, pulling a line, getting water. Maybe you're doing a search.
Nice.
That type of thing. I think putting it all together, right? We drill in the individual things all the time. Throw a ladder and do a search. We dress the hydrant and run the deck gun. We pull a line and flow some water. Putting all those together in real time and doing, I think that's would probably be my favorite drill. I think it's probably the most productive drill.
All right. I love the answer. Anytime you involve a company, multi-company, and you're actually pulling lines and doing stuff, you get max points from me, period. So 100%, especially if you get people radio traffic and making decisions.
Right.
To me, that's the perfect drill. So you're right in my favorite wheelhouse. Call back here. William Vranbrenner wanted to know, quick question, back to number one. What, if I may, can you teach passion, or is it just something you have or don't? What is your opinion?
I'm not the expert on that. I don't think so. I don't think you can teach passion. I think that you can create interest that may cultivate passion, but I don't think you can teach passion. I think that, we should be striving to keep people engaged in doing the job. And you don't engage people in doing the job by cleaning the bathrooms. Something we have to do. But I think if every day you come to work and all you do is check the trucks, clean the bathrooms, and check the trucks and clean the bathrooms and go on calls, okay, yeah, I'm an ambulance attendant that cleans the bathrooms. So I think if you can create interest and keep people interested and focused, that maybe cultivates passion.
Right on, right on. Right back to that fire first culture. No, I love it, man. And you're right. Create conditions where passion can bloom, but you can't just teach people it.
Yeah. Right.
I love it. Okay. I don't know where I was at, but you got max points on your training drill. Number four, what mistake have you learned the most from in your fire service career?
So I'm going to go back to losing my temper. You're going to see, and this is my perspective, it's probably different now because of my role, but losing my temper. So, like we talked about, people and all those things. So I lost a guy, was on my shift because I completely came unglued. He did something that made me so upset. I was on the phone with him. I was at home. I was on the phone with him. It was actually a tent company installing a tent in the backyard for my brother-in-law's family reunion. It was in my house. And I was yelling so loud on the phone that my wife had to go outside and tell the tent guys that I was on the phone with somebody so they didn't call the cops thinking that I was yelling at her.
Nice.
And he ended up hanging up on me and completely and forever damaged our relationship. Not that it was great to begin with, but I learned a valuable lesson that day, which is just because you can lose your temper doesn't mean you should lose your temper. And you lose, going back to right, yelling, raising your voice, elevating. There are times when you need to be authoritative and firm, but when you yell, you've lost control. And when you lose control, you damage relationships beyond repair. That's my experience.
No, it's fun. Yeah. Dude, 1,000% love. Not only the personal story, but the answer. And so you are 4-for-4 on max points. And technically, William Van Brenner said max points twice because you had a question in there where you answered it can't be taught and also max points. So final question, number 5. It's not a new question. It is the age-old question.
Yeah.
Heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
I don't know. So I was trying to remember my answer from the last
time. I did not go back and check. So you're clear.
And
right,
I think my answer this time would be I want to be on the search. I want to be in making a difference. And not that, I mean, it's a hard call because
100%.
You know, it's like the age old argument people used to have with, like, you know, smooth bore or fog nozzle. I'm like, I want the one that's got fire in front of it. I don't care which nozzle it is. So that's where I want to be. But I think I would argue now that where I am now that the VES would be where I'd want to be.
I love it, man. You just went 6-for-6 on the 5 questions for firefighters.
Nice.
Max points 100%.
You do math like I do math.
Yeah, 100%. all the time, 100% of the time. It works every time.
Right.
There it is. Officially 143 scraps in the books. Chief Dave LeBlanc. Nice. Hey, if someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do so? Ask them questions or follow up or just pick your brain the way I do.
So, I mean, the best way is, two ways. I'll give you I'm on Facebook. I'm not a secret. My logo is, it's a red coffee, Dave's Coffee sign. Feel free to add me. I get a million friends and Facebook doesn't let me talk to half of them. But I mean, and that's, I made some of the best connections there. The other is my email address. So my first initial D period, LeBlanc, LeBLANC at comcast.net. Shoot me an email. I check it pretty religiously. So, but yeah, I'm happy to talk, you know, about anything. And if I, you know, I learn everything that I do, it's why I teach. Everything that I do, I learn from. So I'll take as much from you as you give me every time.
Now, I have to ask, have I been mispronouncing your name the entire time I've known you by saying LeBlanc?
No, you technically pronounce it the right way. I pronounce it the wrong way.
Okay. I feel bad.
But
so,
yeah, it's, I don't know. We went through this with the family. LeBlanc is the right way. It's been Americanized and we call it LeBlanc. And
what do you prefer?
I don't care.
Okay. I'll say LeBlanc.
Yeah, no, you're good. Whatever you want, man. Just don't call me late for supper. I don't care what you call me.
100%. There it is, man. 143. Brother, amazing. Everybody, audience, thank you for the questions, comments, everything. I got a few housekeeping things always. Go get shirts, coin stickers, hats. Here's the deal. This is no surprise to anybody. Cost of everything is going up. Cost on the store is going to go up in the next couple weeks. As we make our next set of orders, we're going to adjust costs. Costs are not going up right now, so if you want to get something at the current rates, go purchase Firehouse Vigilance swag. The Loden hats, I think there's like, we just got them in and they're almost sold out because you can't keep the Loden hats in stock. So if you want one, grab one. We are going to start advertising on the scrap. So I announced that to everybody, but here's the deal. There's been a few people out there in the fire sphere that have been supporting the scrap and monetarily supporting the scrap with, subscriptions and donations. So me personally, as the host, I wanted to say, how can I bring value to those people? And so what I'm going to do, and I don't want to ever take the scrap away. I never want to put the scrap behind a paywall or anything like that. It's never going to happen. So what I want to do is this, is if you are someone who supports the scrap, I'm going to do a live broadcast once a month that only the subscribers and the supporters get to go into. What's going to be in there? Man, it's going to be me and my thoughts and talking about books and talking about classes and talking about the future of the scrap and what the next 5 questions are going to be and who should be on as guests and things like that. So if you want to be involved in that and support the scrap, that's what I'm going to try and add for those people who support it. So I hope that makes sense. I will be sending out a invite to everybody that is a subscriber and anybody that supports the scrap. So I'll be sending that out. So I wanted to announce that. Other than that, coming up as guests, we've got Don Sapp. Man, Uncle Don's coming on. We're going to talk. It's going to be a good time. We have Firefighter Fenton. If you're a fan of big mustaches, he might be the only person who has a better one than Dave LeBlanc here.
No, he's got me.
He's got that big old, by a ton. Big old mustache. It's going to be fun. That one is going to be a fun one. Followed by Robbie Owens, Kevin Pfluger, Todd Shepard, which, you know, I have to talk to Todd because he just got hit by a tornado up there where he's at, and see how he's doing and see if that's still going to happen. And then here's the deal. Episode number 150. As a tradition, episode 100 was Kurt Isaacson, so episode 150 is also going to be Kurt Isaacson. He is going to give away a whole bunch of passes. I think the number is 5 passes to the upcoming conferences. I didn't get the details on which ones, but I'm on that scrap, we are going to give away 5 passes to CF Tactics conferences down there in Pensacola and get people going to it. So tune in for that. Other than that, that's all the housekeeping. Unbelievably good time. Chief, thank you so much for your evening.
Thank you, Corley. Thank you, brother. I'm honored to be on, and it was a great time, as always.
Everybody, audio, Smoothboard, thank you. Great question. Smoothboard Cartel, Kyle, my man, taking care of business. He said, how do we subscribe? If you go to firehousevigilance.com, there's a big giant button that says, do you want to support the scrap? And there's multiple ways you can do it right then and there. There is no tiers. There's no differences. It's whatever you feel like the scrap is worth to you. And then we're going to do the vigilantes. And I really am, not to take away from anything, I really am excited about this because it's going to be a private thing with the most intimate scrap. It's not a scrap because those will always be out here free with the guests. So anyway, there's that answer. So back to where I was at. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, audience. Unbelievably good questions. I hope the tone stays silent unless it is burning. Everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.